back to another episode of Coming Out Stories from What Goes On Media. I'm Emma Goswell and I'm your host. We pretty much do what we say on the tin. We bring you real people from the LGBTQ plus community who are happy to share intimate conversations and talk about their lives and their journeys. This episode, you'll hear from Andrew, who lives in Brighton in England. We started chatting about how he identifies.
A queer person, I think that's probably something that I've got more comfortable with over the years. Gay man doesn't really fit. I don't know, over the years as I've developed, I've kind of thought, I'm not sure if that's kind of where I sit. So yeah, I think queer for me kind of encompasses everything.
Which is interesting, isn't it? Because it probably ages you, that, because I think certainly old people in our community can't stand that word because it was really seen as derogatory. And, you know, a lot of people used it as a homophobic slur when they were growing up and they couldn't cope with it. But at what point did you accept it and go, I actually like this word and I'm going to use it and own it?
I think for me, it was, I didn't like the word either because it did kind of provide reminders of childhood and being at school and you know, being called a queer, that kind of thing. But I think as I started to get more comfortable with myself and get more involved with the community, it just felt like it kind of encompassed lots of different facets of my personality. So for me, it was just a way of going, okay, this is a bit of a strange word to use, but it fits. And I think it just felt more comfortable because it was like less boxes, whereas I kind of felt like, oh, I'm a gay man, but I also feel a bit non-binary and I want to dress like this, but I also want to do this. And I'm in a marriage with a man, but actually I don't feel like this. And I think it's a bit of a, can we swear on this?
Yeah, you can fucking swear on a podcast.
Love it. But it's a bit of a head fuck, isn't it? Because you kind of, there's so much stuff that you're kind of going through. And then, so for me, it just was a way of bringing everything together.
I love that. Yeah. So you are gay, but you also don't identify as being cisgendered. So it's just, you are queer.
Yeah, queer. Queer in here. Queer I am.
We're here. We're queer. We're not going shopping. Remember that one? Never really understood that, but anyway. All right, so let's go back a bit then. Let's rewind. Do you mind saying how old you are now?
Yeah, 37.
37.
Good age. Like I'm a 30s. 30s are good.
Now, I know you're based in Brighton now, but did you grow up there or did you grow up somewhere else?
No, I moved here 8 months ago with my husband. And before that, we lived in Suffolk. So very different place to Brighton. And then, we had obviously the COVID pandemic. We all went through that. And it was just after that, we kind of thought, okay, what's next? What do we want to do? What's our next kind of adventure? And we decided just to kind of pack everything up and move here. And it's probably the best thing we've ever done. It's just amazing here.
And is it the gay mecca that you once imagined it would be?
Yeah, and more. It's just, I love the fact that we're in Hove. So we're like 3 minutes on the beach, which is amazing. And then we're 3 minutes from the high street. And I'm a 10-minute cab ride into Kemp Town. And I can go and see drag 7 nights a week, or I can go to the pub and meet different people, or I can, you know, you walk around the city and I've described it as being visibly invisible because I feel like I'm blending, but I'm also visible, if that makes sense. Whereas in Suffolk, I stood out like a sore thumb. It was a bit like, oh, that's the gay couple. Those two must be together. Yeah. You know, you'd go to things where a lot of straight people were at and it would be like, oh, those are the token gay guys that are here. And so here it's just like, we are one of many and it just feels beautiful, you know?
I love that. I've got a friend actually who lives in Brighton and he ended up running a load of pubs there. And I said to him when he got his first pub, I said, is it going to be a gay pub? And he went, Emma, every pub in Brighton's a gay pub.
It's true.
We don't need to define these things. It's just it's just for everybody. It's like, it's for gay people, it's for straight people, it's for trans people, it's for gender people. It's a pub.
I generally feel safe here, actually, I think. And, you know, touch wood, I've not had a bad experience, but I don't ever think of being queer or being kind of on display. For me, it just feels like if I walk around the city, I'm surrounded by the community generally wherever I go. And it's very bohemian here as well. So everyone dresses a bit funky. Everyone's a bit out there. It's very diverse. So
you've got some lovely shops in the lanes, haven't you? To get your funky clothing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I tell you what, this is a cracking advert for Brighton, isn't it?
It is.
Everyone's going to be moving to Brighton after listening to this episode.
I should do the Visit Brighton voiceover, shouldn't I? Visit Brighton.
You totally should. They'd have a gay person doing that.
Yeah, of course.
But I mean, I live in Manchester and I think the same could be said for both places. They are gay meccas and people leave countryside places or smaller towns to migrate to city if they are part of the LGBT community. I think that's what happens, isn't it? And I guess that was part of your thinking, wasn't it?
Yeah, and but you know what? It's funny because we look back now, and I think we did try to live a conventional straight life, really. And not that there's anything wrong with straight lives, but it's just, it's not us. So I think we always felt a bit like a square peg in a round hole, because it was like, I don't know, we lived in a very conservative place. We did the right things, and you know, we met, we bought a house, we got married, we had the sensible jobs, we socialized at dinner parties, we did all the things that our friends did, and we were always the kind of gay couple. And it was only really when we just kind of got a bit older, we were like, okay, this just feels like we're blending for the sake of blending. And actually, what about sticking out? And what about really celebrating who we are? And I don't know, just since moving here, it's just like people are reflecting you back. And it's like you get to have conversations that I couldn't have had in Suffolk, you know, with people, just because people understand what it's like to be queer and what it's like to live your life authentically. So that's been a really special thing.
Yeah, and it's tiring being around people that don't understand your journey, or, you know, it's not, this is sounding a bit ridiculous, like, oh, you can't have straight friends. I don't mean that. I just mean if you are 100% surrounded by straight people or cisgender people, they're not going to get every single reference or everything that you're going through, are they?
No. I think it's that thing around, if something doesn't directly impact you, you don't necessarily think about it. You know, that could be the same for any kind of situation with you know, diversity or intersectionality. But I think we all kind of have a duty to educate and learn if we can. I always felt like I had supportive people around me, but no one really truly understood what it was like to be us in that environment.
No, I mean, did you feel comfortable to walk down the street in Suffolk holding your husband's hand?
Oh God, no. We'd have a sneaky kiss in Waterstones behind the bookshelves. We'd be like, at lunchtime, we're like, do you have a quick kiss?
Why there?
Because it was like a safe haven. Waterstones is always a very calm place at lunchtime when we'd had a busy day. But no, absolutely not. We just wouldn't have done it. And, you know, we'd been in supermarkets and been called, you know, a fag or a perf or whatever, was just getting the groceries and, you know, and it's that kind of thing where you just kind of learn to filter yourself because you think, don't stick out, don't want any trouble, you know?
Yeah. Right, well, it's time to rewind, probably, because this is your coming out story. So we kind of know the ending first, don't we? You are a happily married gay man living his best queer life in Brighton. But let's talk about your childhood a bit. Then where was that, and how did that feel to... Well, when did you discover that you might be different?
So grew up in Suffolk. I think I probably always knew, looking back, and it's funny because everyone says this kind of thing on the podcast, don't they? You know, you listen to the other episodes, everyone kind of knew. But I was listening to some of them the other week, actually, and I thought, you know, some of the stories really resonated with me. So I don't know, I was like, I didn't really have girlfriends at school, and I kind of, I don't know, I had friends that I fooled around with, you know, when I was in my younger years, if that makes sense. Yeah. And I'm talking like 7, 8, you know, just the inquisitive childhood stage of everyone just being like, you know, a bit kind of naughty or whatever else. But I think even that, I kind of always knew, probably from, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, that I was different. I remember, actually, this really resonated with me the other day when someone said this on the podcast. I remember going swimming and we all had like communal changing rooms and stuff. And I remember thinking, oh, the boys are in here, or they're looking at me, or, you know, and I felt like a sense of attraction to them even then. So I think it's probably always there, but it's one of those things where you kind of go, you don't really think about it because you're 7, 8, 9 years old. Yeah. You just kind of move on.
And it's not an overtly sexual thing, is it? It's kind of
an attraction. It's just like, oh, this feels a bit different. But actually, you don't really pinpoint it or think about it, really. But I'd had, like, you know, girlfriends that I'd snogged and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, and then I think as I got into high school, it just maybe just became a bit more obvious to me, really. But I did a very, very, well, I say I did a very good job. I just really just repressed any of it down. I was bullied and I was very much kind of shamed and called every name you can imagine at high school.
And this wasn't because you'd come out. They just decided that you were gay and they were going
that's how I was treated. So I kind of grew up with that shame and fear of that whole thing before I even knew or understood myself. And, you know, that came from people that were in my kind of inner circle as well. So it was a bit of a tough time. And then I think I didn't really get comfortable with any of that until I was probably about 19. So it was quite late in the day, but, you know, again, I didn't have girlfriends. I didn't have relationships in my teenage years. I was always single and wasn't interested. And friends would say, you never, when we go out, you never, you know, try and put, or you never kind of, you know, chat people up. And I was like, oh, I just really like to dance. Which is hilarious, isn't it?
So when they were calling you these names and presumably calling you gay and you know, homophobic slurs, were you just denying it and just saying, no, I'm not, or did you come out of school?
No, I didn't. Oh, goodness, no, I didn't. I didn't. And I think I probably then deflected in some way and wasn't a bully, but I then found people that I could take the piss out of for other reasons so that I wasn't in the centre of attention, which I look back now and think, oh, that's really awful. But I think, you know, when you're kids, you don't really grasp what's right or wrong or how those things can make people feel necessarily. I mean, I wasn't an unkind person or a bully, but I think it was anything I could do to almost deflect the attention away from me. And again, I remember just having that feeling of just always being aware that people were watching or talking about me and making up their mind about me before I even kind of knew what was going on.
And that's not great for your mental health, is it? To constantly think people are talking about you and judging you.
Yeah. And, you know, God, I look back now as well. Like, I had severe acne as a teenager. My skin was terrible. I was probably quite depressed. I mean, I have diagnosed OCD as well. And luckily I'm, you know, touch wood, I'm well. I've had support in the last 12 months or so because I got a bit poorly again. But, you know, that really was quite present through most of my childhood. And I think it's because I never really felt quite safe. I never really felt like I fitted in or felt like I belonged in so many situations. So I think I was always on hyper alert, almost checking myself and making sure that I didn't do something wrong or put a foot out of place or, you know, could be accepted by people. And I think that probably when I look back now links heavily to the feeling of always feeling like I didn't belong or was made to feel like I was wrong in some kind of way, you know, shame. And I definitely think I carried that through with my adult years until probably my early 30s, because it was just something that I didn't really know was there until I really knew it was there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to mention the shame word, because, you know, so often we get asked, you know, why do we need pride? And, I keep trying to explain this to straight people and on various radio stations and outlets. You know, we need pride because so many of us have felt this shame for who we are.
Yeah.
Like, we have to go and stand on the streets and be proud of who we are, because pretty much all of us have gone through those, even if it's just a short period of time, of feeling that we're wrong and that we are something to be ashamed of. And it's crazy to look back now and think that we all went through that, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, shame has probably been one of the most kind of poisonous things that has affected most of my life, I think. If I look back now, it's been an issue for my mental health. I've doubted myself in so many ways in life. It's affected my relationship at times. It's affected the way I perceive myself. It's affected how I fit in society, or, you know, even things like when I first started working in an office and going to work, I was almost afraid of the men in the office, because I would go into the office where we'd made tea and coffee, and if there was a group of guys there, I would walk around the opposite way so I could avoid going into the group of guys, because for me, it was like that intimidation or fear of, you know, they know something about me. They're going to judge me. It's a shame thing. And it's because you grow up feeling that you're less than or you're wrong in some way for just being who you are. When I started to realize that, I was like, no, I will, I will walk down that, you know, corridor and I will get my coffee, but it took time and I'm more comfortable now. But there was a lot of years where I just walked with my head down and didn't feel that great about myself. Because I think of all of that was kind of a factor, you know?
It's such a sad and common story, unfortunately.
Yeah,
it really is. So when did you get to the stage where you thought, okay, I'm gay and I'm also going to do something about it and possibly chat somebody up or go on the pull or tell someone?
So I started working at a company and we had this quiz night on a Wednesday, and there was a group of us used to work until about 8 o'clock at night, and then we'd go to the quiz, and it was always really good fun. And there was a guy that used to go there, and I just felt this pull towards him, and I didn't know he was gay, but there was an attraction or like an instant kind of, there was just something there. I just sensed something was kind of there. We ended up being friends. We never had a relationship. I think at one point I did fall for him, but I think it was more infatuation or the desire to be loved or the desire to kind of come out and know who I was as such. But we were always just friends. But I think when that kind of happened, it kind of opened the door for me to go, okay, maybe this is who I am. And actually it's about accepting it and living a free life. And then I moved out of home and rented a room from someone. And again, all of those kind of steps gave me the courage to kind of go, okay, maybe I could live my own life here, my own path as such. And then, just kind of, you know, had a relationship in inverted commas. It wasn't a relationship, but, you know.
A fling.
had a fling, nothing to write home about, but I had a fling. And I think it just kind of, when I did that, I then started telling friends and just saying, actually, I think, you know, this is who I am. And although I knew it was who I was, I think it just almost outwardly saying it and being comfortable with it was another thing.
And how old were you at this stage then before?
19.
Oh, you were 19?
19 at that point, yeah. Oh. And then my friend said to me, you know, you're telling a few people, you probably need to tell your family in case they find out through someone else. And so then I had roast pork at my mum's on a Sunday. I remember it so well. And my dad went into the lounge and watched the football. My mum was at the table reading the newspapers. And I remember just kind of saying it and just saying, I've got something to tell you, and, you know, coming out and saying it.
And you found the words. You found the words to say, "Mum, I'm gay."
Yeah, but then I really oddly, I burst out crying, and I didn't expect that to happen. Maybe it was a build up of something that was coming out.
Well, how did she react?
She probably won't listen to this, so I can be honest. It's fine. I think, to be honest, I mean, we have a good relationship now in the sense that, you know, she loves my husband. She loves me, and, you know, she accepts who we are. But I think at the time it was very much about her and other people's opinions. No, I'm not saying this to hurt her or hurt anyone else, but I think it's just the truth and it's the reality. And I think this is what a lot of queer people go through, and this is something that I think we should speak about more, is that when you come out, people automatically think you're free, but actually you're not always, because the people around you, they have their own opinions on the situation. They have their own thoughts and fears. You know, my mum is from a generation where in the 80s and 90s, she was reading, you know, red top newspapers, reading about the AIDS and HIV epidemic, believing all the propaganda out there as fact. You know, one of the first things she said to me was, I'm really worried you're going to be lonely. I'm worried you're going to get ill. You know, and obviously referring back to that time. And there was no real conversation about how are you or how do you feel or what does this mean to you? It was just very much denial. And then almost I was made to feel bad about it, because I don't think she really knew how to deal with it. So I felt like I was tiptoeing and walking on eggshells for such a long time until she could finally accept me. And I don't know if many other people have that experience as well, but I think I felt like I was more worried about her feelings than my own. And actually at that time, it should have been very much about, wow, this is a really big thing. What's next for me? How do I live my life? What does that mean? But I couldn't really focus on that, to be honest. And then the wars started, you know, in terms of arguments and all that kind of stuff. And it was tough.
And you were a teenager at this stage. But I guess all you want to hear at those moments is just, it's fine. I still love you. But that didn't come for a while.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, when I met Theo when I was 21. So we've been together 17 years this year. So we've had a long-term relationship.
Wow.
And yeah, I know. Yeah, we've been married for 12. And, you know, so I think that she has obviously seen us settled, and she, I don't think she likes the fact we've moved away to Brighton, because we're not there, you know, but that's just families wanting everyone to be around.
Yeah.
That's by the by, you know, it's great for us. But she loves Theo. She thinks a lot of him, and I think she really loves our relationship and she respects it. But it took a long time to kind of get there.
So that's 2 years after you moved out and told her.
I'm out. And I made the stupid mistake of moving back home for a year before I met Theo. Never move home when you've moved out. My God, when you've had your freedom and then you move back home, it is tough. We just didn't get on. It would often come up, you know, about my sexuality and all that kind of stuff. And it was a tough old time, really.
Were you getting support or friends, though?
I was, but I think, and again, when you look back, I think you almost play a role, or you become the token person. So you become, oh, my gay friend Andrew, or, oh, Andrew's the gay person in the office, or we're going to go out with Andrew because he's so much fun because he's gay. I mean, I'm 37 now, so I can look back. But when you're 19 and you're impressionable and you're naive and you're insecure and all those things, I think you sometimes just do what you think you should do because it gets people to like you. And I definitely think I was a victim of that. It was just very much like, I'll be who I think I should be to please other people and be accepted. And it was only really when I got older and realized that these people weren't really friends, or that situation didn't support me, that it was a way of kind of going, no, this isn't the right thing, you know, to do.
they wanted you to be a gay best friend or be the funny one in the office.
Yeah, definitely. I was the diversity in the corner, you know. It's just, I mean, don't get me wrong. Everyone's got their journey and, you know, maybe I wouldn't be where I am right now if I hadn't gone through those situations. But I do think when you're young, you need people around you that are supportive. And, you know, maybe if I'd have had a bit more of a better coming out experience, I wouldn't have needed to seek approval from the people around me outside of my family so much. Mm. But then, you know, even the person that I really liked, you know, I remember him talking about how he was straight acting, and it was almost like this kind of like the shaming coming from inside the community as well. It was about like you had to be straight acting. People weren't camp. If you were camp, you were seen less as. And I don't know, because I was so young and so naive, I believed that stuff. You know, I was 19 and I was like, oh right, that's how things are, you know, that's how the community works. And it was only when I then started to find my own way that I realized, well, that's all just a load of bullshit. And quite honestly, disrespectful and discriminatory and hideous.
Yeah, there's a place for all of us, camp or not camp. Yeah,
absolutely. And I feel the queerest I've ever felt. And I fucking love it. I wouldn't be anyone else. But it's like when you're 19, you kind of, you're influenced, aren't you? You're young.
You are. Mm. So you haven't mentioned your dad yet. Was that difficult?
It's really funny actually, because I thought he'd be the one who would be difficult, but he was just, he didn't really say anything and he was okay. But I don't know if it was one of those situations where he just didn't really think about it. I don't really know. So no, my mum kind of did the busybodying for everyone.
And did he have any brothers or sisters?
Yeah, I've got a sister and I've got... I have a brother and I have an ex-brother because I've kind of cut one of them out because he's a little bit toxic. So I've had to part ways with him. But yeah, I had a brother that I kind of grew up with who was, you know, kind of similar in age to me. Yeah, I guess, you know, he was one of my bullies, really, if I'm completely honest. When I was a teenager, that was often a thing. So this is turning into a real life like therapy situation. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It is a bit like therapy, this podcast, sometimes, to be honest.
Yeah, it's cool now. But at the time, as a teenager, he was probably one of my biggest bullies because he would often call me the names that the people at school did. And you internalize all that stuff. So it's only really when you get older, you kind of go, God, that was really shit. Like, how could anyone do that to someone, you know?
And he was older than you.
Like 18 months. Yeah,
quite near then, yeah.
Mm. So it was a bit of a tougher situation. But then I met Theo and things blossomed.
Yeah, so tell us how you met your husband then.
Yeah, so we met at a party. So he went to this party with another friend and I went with my straight acting friend and at the time. And yeah, and we just kind of, we shared a cigarette and got talking and just, I don't know, we just became friends. And then literally about 5 months later, we got together. 5 months later, we moved in together. And then 5 years later, we got married. And yeah, it just kind of all worked out well. And, you know, it's not always been easy. It's, you know, when you grow up together and you kind of, you know, you're 21 and 23 and you become 40 and 37, you've developed a lot during that time. And even recently, you know, we've had a few ups and downs and so much change has kind of happened, you know, recently with moving here and kind of with life generally. But I have to say, it is a foundation of everything good in my life. Like we are best friends and we love and laugh loads. And it's just, I think you have to really like each other to have a successful relationship.
But that's very telling that you were friends first. So that's the most solid foundation of any relationship, isn't it? You've got to be friends first, you know.
Definitely.
The lover's bit comes and goes fairly, you know. It can come and go quite quickly, can't it?
But absolutely.
Friendships always last longer, don't they?
It's like, can you tell someone everything and can you feel comfortable with their silence or just feel that you've got support there? You know, it's all those foundational things which just I think mean a lot in a relationship. So no, I'm very lucky indeed.
And tell us about your wedding day. What was it like?
God, it's 12 years ago now. So it was it's funny, isn't it? We looked back at the pictures recently and I was like, we wouldn't wear that again, grey suit. It was a bit random, but yeah, it was nice. We got married in Dedham in Essex and a really nice little venue by the river. And we had like a civil ceremony, because you couldn't do proper weddings then. It was civil partnerships.
I was going to say, we didn't have them 12 years ago, did we? No,
so we converted that back in 2014, I think. Yeah, so we did the ceremony and we just had like 40 friends and family around us. And it was a really chilled like hotel. So people were sitting on like on armchairs and by the fireplace. And it was very, all very lovely in like a June day. And then, then we had like a really nice meal and pictures and pims and yeah, just a really small intimate day and everyone just kind of coming together. It was really lovely, really, really nice. I think one of the things I was most nervous about was things like the vows and actually standing there and yeah, doing all of that. But actually it was one of the best things about it actually. So it was a really nice moment.
Oh, so you totally got your happy ever ending then, didn't you, after all that upset and shame earlier on in your life? So we've talked a lot about your sexuality, but we haven't talked a lot about your gender identity because, you know, as soon as I logged on to this call, you were identifying as they, them. What does that mean for you?
So I think for me, they, them is something that I'm probably really trying to get comfortable with now. If someone says he, him, you know, pronouns are really important, but if someone says that, I'm not really offended by it because actually I've been he, him for 30 odd years. But I think for me, they, them, what I'm trying to accept about that is that actually a bit like queer, it encompasses so much more than just the kind of standard gender terms. And I don't believe that I fit into those standard gender terms. You know, I like to paint my nails. I don't, you know, wear a dress yet, or I'm not dressing in clothing that would identify me necessarily as society would see as a woman. But equally, I like to have the options. I just don't like being hemmed in into a box for me. I think I've done that for so many years that it's important to be more free in that respect. So whether I end up doing more stuff than my nails, for me, it's not about that. It's just about options. And, you know, my nails were a really big thing for me because when I was a kid, all my friends were girls and they all had their nails painted. And I remember painting my nails with felt tip to colour them in. And I was told, no, boys don't paint their nails. So I had to wash it off and stuff like that. And it took me probably, I mean, even last year in lockdown, I decided that I'd been talking about this for years and I said, why don't you just go and paint your nails? You want to do it.
Yeah,
I don't care. It's nail varnish. Just do it. It doesn't mean anything. But I was thinking, well, if I want to do that, does it mean I'm trans? Does it mean I'm this? Does it mean I want to change my gender? You know, all this kind of stuff. And again, I think it's all that self-doubt that kind of goes through your head because you learn to question yourself so much, you know, throughout your life. So in the end, I was like, what am I doing? This is just nail varnish. This doesn't mean anything other than I like to have funky nails. Go and do it. But when I did it, the anxiety I felt was just so intense. Whereas now I go to the salon and I have gels done and I'm laughing and joking with the ladies who are working in there. And, you know, it's lovely. But definitely during lockdown, when I first started doing it, it was a real big thing for me. And it shouldn't be. It's just, again, anyone that's thinking about doing anything like that, it's just nail varnish. Just do it.
Yeah. But it sounds like it was a bit of a process for you. Did you have to like come out to your husband then as being non-binary? Is it something you discussed?
No, I think we've always just had a really open relationship where we've talked about that stuff quite honestly and openly. So for me, it was never really an issue or like a coming out, but I think it was a natural progression of conversation. So it was just like, I think I'm feeling this way. I think my feelings are a bit here now. I think this is what the natural thing was. But having said that, there probably was times where, you know, there was anxiety around that because I didn't quite know how to process my feelings as well. But the great thing about our relationship is that we always talk and we communicate really well. So it was like, actually, he kind of feels the same as well. We both don't fit into the boxes that society has created and don't really believe in them, you know? So don't believe in them because actually everyone's so multifaceted. Why could you just fit in one box or the other? It's crazy.
And has other people in your life respected your pronouns and used they, them?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see it like, in some situations, and actually, yes, friends locally here do. I think no one's really mentioned it from back home, or no one's really talked about it. But then I've not made a big thing of it either. I've not kind of said, "Oh, you now need to call me." I think for me personally, it's probably more about self-acceptance than being accepted by others at this point. Yeah. So I'm not diminishing the importance of pronouns because they are so important, you know. But for me, I think it was more just I feel comfortable like this, and I don't need to explain it. And actually, if people use it, hopefully they will. But if they don't, I know how I feel. And actually, I'm going to have my own back. Whereas maybe 20 years ago, I probably wouldn't have been able to feel that way. So it's a natural progression.
And it's all very individual, isn't it? All of these things, really. So as long as you are happy, that is the main person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just think we're also individual and different and be a bit boring if we're all the same, wouldn't it? It's just live and let live.
Amen to that.
Yes.
You have been on journey, undoubtedly, haven't you? And learned a lot of lessons along the way. What would your advice be to other young people who are maybe 18, 19, like you were, and really in that tough place, you know, where you were struggling and getting bullied and not accepting yourself and trying to be a fake version of yourself?
I think surround yourself with good people that are not yes people, or, you know, people that tell you what you want to hear, people that are genuine, authentic, and have your back and have your good interests, or have your interests in a good place. And I think one of the things I didn't do until much later in life was ask for help. And I think if you're struggling and you feel that your mental health is declining, or you feel that you just need support, talk to someone impartially, or just get some help, just pick up the phone to one of the helplines that are out there, or see your GP. There is no shame in supporting yourself and making yourself well. And I think sometimes we leave these things far too late. And, you know, there's evidence, isn't there, to suggest that people who are queer are more likely to, you know, have mental health conditions and attempted suicide and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, we've got to look after ourselves and get the right support. So I think get support and good people around you. And if there's naysayers or people that aren't really doing you any good, as hard as it is, try and move away from them, because your time is precious. Definitely.
Exactly. We're not here for long, are we?
No.
And move to Brighton.
Yes. Yes, move to Brighton. Come into this amazing place. It is just beautiful.
And you're so out and proud and happy and love talking. You've sat at your own gay podcast as well. I mean, yes. I shouldn't really publicise, you know, the competition, but I think your podcast is very different to ours, isn't it?
Is,
so
it
just
is.
Tell people quickly a little bit about it.
Yeah, so when I first moved here, one of the things that really I loved the most was just the conversations I was having in the pubs and cafes with people, just about queer life, queer history, different artists, that kind of stuff that I was speaking to. And we have a real kind of great artist scene here in terms of drag acts. Everyone's always doing something. You've got authors and photographers and voiceover people, and everyone's like, oh yeah, I'm just doing this on the side as well as my full-time job. And it's just, you know, it's just wonderful to see. So because I love those conversations, I just thought, well, I wonder if I could put those into a podcast and talk about the love of the city, but also talk about people's experiences and their artistry. Because, you know, sometimes you go to the pub and you see a drag queen performing, or you see someone doing something on the stage, and you don't know the backstory or what's gone into that act or that art. Yeah. And that's what really interested me. So, yeah, it's called Queer I Am, and it's available on all streaming platforms. And we're celebrating local artists in Brighton and Hove. So I think it's a really interesting podcast, and I'm very proud of the work as well.
Oh, fantastic. Well, as it's an LGBT one, and as you're so lovely, I think it's fair enough for you to do that.
Thank you.
Fair enough for you to do that little plug at the end. Well, I hope you get loads of listeners from here as well.
Yeah, so, thank you. And thank you so much for having me on as well. It's just really lovely to speak with you and talk about my coming out story. And I've loved the book as well, by the way. It's been great.
Available in all good bookstores.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, there's plug, plug, plug on this podcast today,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, you have to. You have to.
Oh, God. You have to, don't you? It is good to advertise, isn't it? And talking of which, if you would like the chance to advertise by sponsoring Coming Out Stories, or maybe you know someone who might be interested in helping to support this podcast to keep going, please do get in contact. The best way to do that is probably to go to our website, comingoutstoriespodcast.com, and click on the Get In Touch icon. We'd love to hear from you. And don't forget to follow us on all the socials too, at Come Out Stories on Twitter and at Coming Out Stories Pod on Instagram. A big thank you to Brighton's latest ambassador, Andrew Flewitt. He does love Brighton, doesn't he? And please do go and check out his podcast too. It's called Queer I Am, and there are plenty of episodes to listen back to. Do not miss the next episode, though, because you will meet Yo-Yo, a lesbian from Malaysia where it's illegal to be gay. She very nearly got caught and could have been in serious trouble when a love letter to her girlfriend was found and opened.
Because we're queer, we're smart, right?
Yeah.
We turn all the letters to quotes. So we wrote each other letters in quotes.
This is like Anne Lister's diaries from the 18th century.
So for example, an envelope, right? So we have like a simple icon, like an envelope, an umbrella, you. So we just have a simple icon of Umbrella. I still keep that letter. It's not because I reminisce, you know, my love for her or whatever, but how difficult it was and how smart I think we were trying to talk to each other, you know?